Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Miro, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. With me today is author Rick Capuzzi. How are you today, Rick?
I'm very well, thank you.
It is an absolute pleasure to have you here on the podcast, and of course, Rick is the author of The Growth Mindset. He is also the president of the Capuzzi Advisory Group, and you can find them at capuzziadvisorygroup.com. And I'm very happy to have you today on the podcast, Rick. And without further delay, let's get into today's conversation. And the first question I want to ask you is the one I ask any author that comes on the podcast, and that's actually, what inspired you to become an author and start writing?
Yeah, so I guess after 35 years of spending time on Wall Street, and frankly, any field for that matter, you feel you have a story to tell. And as I travel around the world visiting different countries, after I was done with the presentation or a keynote, I would often get folks that would ask me, hey, do you have a book or do you have a book coming out? So over the years, I kept hearing that, and I felt, okay, you know, I think it's time to write a book. So I'm not sure one thing inspired me, but I guess it's from speaking and talking to great leaders from around the world that inspired me to put the best ideas for whether you want to be an entrepreneur in financial services or leadership. And that's what really inspired me. It's you know, being around lots of different people and asking them that it would be a good idea to write a book. So as a result, here it is. I wrote a book, and I'm very, very happy that I wrote it. But it takes a great deal of energy for those authors that are out there. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So I put a lot of energy into this. It probably is about 5 years in the making, because I try to not only work from the North America perspective, but more from a global perspective in terms of best practices, in terms of leadership, in terms of growing a wealth management financial services business. And as a result, that, you know, that takes time and took a lot of research, but I'm happy that it's I have a finished product.
Fantastic. And of course, The Growth Mindset talks about how leadership makes a difference within wealth management. And I like to focus on the book itself now. So can you perhaps run us by the main concepts, and what was the main idea behind The Growth Mindset, and how did you come up with developing the structure for the book?
Yeah, so based on, the concept of the book or the title was that growth is a choice. It's a conscious decision to grow. And based on what I've been able to see over the past 35 years, those leaders, those folks that have a growth mindset believe they could always improve, believe they could always get better. Those that don't have that growth mindset feel that whatever their destiny is, that's it, and they sort of give up. And their mind is fixed rather than constantly looking for ways to evolve and grow. So the whole thought around the book, or the main concepts, are, first of all, having the right attitude, the optimism to constantly feel you can grow. That doesn't mean you're not going to stumble. That doesn't mean we're not going to lose confidence. It doesn't mean we're not going to have setbacks. There, all those things will happen. But the thought is, as a champion, you're going to get knocked down. You're going to get back up. You're going to get knocked down again. You're going to get back up. You're going to learn from your experience. Then you get back up. So it's really having that attitude that you're going to keep hope alive, things are going to get better because you're going to make them better. They're not going to just get better because you're going to wish they get better. And so that's what I was gravitated to as I spoke to leaders around the world. It doesn't matter what country you come from, They either had this attitude or they had the attitude of being a victim.
Right.
Oh, poor me.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I always have bad luck. Yeah. Things don't always turn out my way, and things should be this way or things should be that way. Well, you know, that's the victim. And so I was gravitated to those people that had, again, this energy, this positive energy, this sense of optimism. It was terrific. I mean, it's contagious, frankly. When you're around them, you can tell. And then the second point of the book was you have technology that, which is fundamentally changing the way we do business, that there's lots of conversations around not just financial services, but frankly, any field, how technology is causing lots of disruption around the world. And the purpose of why I discuss what technology will mean to our business, whether we talk about artificial intelligence, digital labor, is that you as an advisor, as a practitioner in the financial services industry, you need to evolve. And what I found is those that can practice a true holistic wealth management business will not be disrupted by technology, because technology, the robot, can do certain things today, whether it's asset allocation or rebalancing, but they can't look into someone's eyes and ask those very important questions, the human element, the intimacy, whether it's comprehensive planning or legacy or estate planning, the more complex aspect of the business. And so that's the other component of the book, is how to evolve to become a true life advisor, not just focus on the transaction or being a vendor. And again, this is applicable to any business, frankly. It's how do you add incremental value? And the third component is really about leadership. Everyone is looking for more leadership. And leadership starts with leading yourself first. It starts with, who am I? What do I stand for? What don't I stand for? Because until you can really become introspective to know who you are as a leader, you can't build the right culture for the organization. And by the way, the organization I'm referring to, it doesn't matter if it's 3 people or 300 or 3,000. It starts with, what type of culture do you want to build? And that starts with knowing yourself. And the leadership concepts or ideas I talk about is full transparency. Around the world, it doesn't matter where you go, people want these 4 things. They want honesty from the leader. They want a vision from the leader. They want them to be competent. They want them to be inspiring. So when we talk about leadership, to me, leadership, it means you will create the best environment for people in the organization to thrive. You're going to create the best culture. So those are just, you know, broadly speaking, the big concepts that I discussed in the book.
Absolutely. Very fascinating. And there's something that you said there that really resonated with me. And that was the part about the technology and how it's rapidly changing, the idea of disruption and how we handle that. Now, being client centric is, I would think, at least for me, a bit of a focus within the book. And you already touched upon this topic. But how do you think, in your opinion, do the advisory services in any really industry, how do they compete in the face of this rapidly changing technology? As you said, do they ask the big questions that the tech can't? Do they do it through their work culture, or is there something else entirely?
Yeah, that's a great question. So regardless of what business, everyone talks about being client-centric. Everyone talks about creating a positive and consistent client experience. One of the things that I believe that many people forget to respond to or forget to have top of mind is you can't have a client-centric focus and you can't have a great client experience unless you have an outstanding culture where all the employees are satisfied where they work. Without sounding corny, where they are happy coming to work. They feel they are making a difference. They feel like they're making a contribution to the bigger picture. So that translates into being client-centric. That translates into creating a great client experience. Now, being client-centric means you're going to play the long game. And what I mean by playing the long game is you're never going to take shortcuts. You're going to stay, you're going to be in the game for the long run, which means sometimes you have to sacrifice any short-term gains in order to make sure that you do what's absolutely in the best interest of the client at all times, not just sometimes, at all times. So the best organizations always are focused on being client-centric first, not trying to meet next quarter's earnings. And so they're not thinking about short-term, they're thinking about long-term, what's in the best interest. Those are the organizations that not only win more business, but have sustainable business models. Now, technology will play a greater and greater role because technology will also create a positive client experience. There's tools, there's algorithms, artificial intelligence that will come into our business where it will create a positive client experience. So it's about marrying technology with the human element of the relationship to create truly a legendary client experience on a very consistent basis. You know, we can talk about client experience and being client-centric. It doesn't do the organization any good if you only do that once in a while, right, or even if you do it most of the time. It's about doing it consistently across the footprint.
Right, absolutely. And as we're on the topic of the company and the team as well, my next question for you, Rick, would be how can companies attract, but then more importantly, perhaps keep the best talent when it comes to giving, you know, the best client-focused services they are? Is there any secret to keeping the best?
Yeah, that's also a great question. So again, regardless of where you turn to in whatever corner of the earth, attracting, retaining, developing the best talent is a challenge for many, many organizations. And the best organization don't make this sort of like a once in a while focus. It's a focus to always be on the lookout to attract the best and brightest talent to the organization. But again, I go back to, if you want to attract the right people, you have to first build a great culture where the word spreads that you go in, that you have the special place, that it's a place that values, respects individuals and has full transparency, and there are opportunities for growth. Everybody wants opportunities for growth. So no matter how the organization handles compensation, can I participate in the growth of that organization? So I when I was at Merrill Lynch, I was the global head of business development. I did a lot of recruiting and trying to attract folks. Whoever you're trying to attract, I think they really fundamentally have three questions that they probably would never ask you, but this is at least what they're thinking about, whether they're interviewing with you or you're trying to negotiate a deal with them. Mm-hmm. They fundamentally want to know three things. One, can I trust you? Two, do you care about me? And are you committed to excellence? You know, you can cut a lot of the other things out. Yes, compensation is important, and all those things are important. But at the end of the day, they want to go to an organization where they feel they, again, could add value, and they're just not a number. They're just not another person trying to be a utility to that organization. And the other piece here is, again, the organization that I've done consulting work with and also speaking engagements. Many organizations have created incentives for the employees. If they make a referral, they receive an actual cash bonus for making that referral. And I've seen those cash, depending on the situations, I've seen those cash bonuses be anywhere between $2,000 and as much as $30,000 in terms of how encouraging the employees to give referrals.
Right, right. That is a great incentive indeed. And now that you've given us a lot of great insight into how managers and, of course, leaders can begin this, in a way, transformation, can you perhaps give our listeners free tips on how they can start forming their own wealth management strategy? I mean, is there any starting point that we can go off on?
So I just want to be clear on this. I'm assuming you're talking about the general public, right?
Now, yes, yes.
Sort of the professional in the business, is that
absolutely
correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so three suggestions I would give you is, number one, read chapter 21, 22, and 23 from my book. I think you'll find for the person that, for the investor, I think they will find that to be beneficial. So that's number one. Number two, I have to say this because it's what I believe and what I'm passionate about. I would find a trusted advisor that you feel comfortable with. I would interview them. I would ask them questions. I would ask them, what's your philosophy on investing? How many years of experience do you have? What type of clients do you currently do business with? How do you get paid? What can I expect from you in terms of service? How often are we going to meet? How often are you going to give me updates? So that's number two. I believe that finding a trusted advisor makes a great deal of sense. Now, if you plan, number three, if you plan to do it on your own, that's fine. There's lots of tools and capabilities all over the world. In fact, there will be even more tools and capabilities in the near future, because you have technology that can help you. So if that's something you want to spend the time and energy, and you're going to do it on your own, you always want to start with, what's the vision? What's the vision of those assets? What are your goals? What do you want those assets to do for you? The second thing I would tell the investor is, I would divide up your assets into three categories: short term, intermediate, and long term. So long term means I don't need this money for the next 10 years. So therefore, I could invest those in equities or equity related instruments. The second is intermediate, where you can take some volatility, but you may need that money over the next 2 to 5 years. And then short term, where, you know, that's money you need right now. But again, it's always dangerous to give advice, general advice, because each individual has unique circumstances that you can't just give blanket advice. It's like going on the internet and finding out how to operate on yourself. You can't
right,
you
yeah.
can't do that.
Yeah.
And so I'm not a big proponent of just giving blanket advice. Generally speaking, big rules in terms of what I've been able to see over the past 35 years, contrary to what most people believe, that, you know, the markets are risky, there's a lot of volatility, there's uncertainty, that's all true. But what we have to remember, for the past 100 years, equities, in terms of investing in equities, it's been the best asset class versus cash or bonds or any other asset class or any other instruments. So history is on our side, that has been the best place to invest if you're a long-term investor. And the risk that people make is they're not more allocated into equities. As a result, they are risk averse, because I believe if I look at the latest, number, there's approximately 30% of people's assets are still in cash or cash equivalent, which means they're really missing out on long-term benefits of being in the equity market. So the risk is not being invested if you don't need the money for the long term. And what happens is in 10 or 20 years, inflation really erodes your assets. Therefore, you're paying a price when you go to bed every night. You may sleep a little bit with less anxiety, but there's a price for reducing that anxiety. And as long as you know that you're paying a price every time you put your head on a pillow and saying, okay, you know, I can sleep now. Just understand, people have to understand, you're paying a price for that. Because again, over the 10 or 20 year period, equities have rewarded us very, very well. So that's, you know, general, I just rather give general advice, but I'm a big proponent in, if you find the right advisor, it will really go a long way in terms of them helping you, being a financial coach. And you know, I would also suggest that if you're not happy with one, you interview someone else until you find somebody that you really click, and that person could add value to your life.
Great, uploading fascinating insight there. And the last question I'd like to ask you, Rick, is the one I ask anyone that actually comes on the podcast, and it's quite a general one, but what are you currently reading?
So that, you know, that's a good question, because I do an awful lot of reading. And the reason I think it's a good question, because one of the things, as I give presentations and I speak to folks from around the world, really my core theme is you have to be a lifelong learner. It's virtually impossible to be working, whether it's financial services or frankly any other field, whether it's healthcare, without being a lifelong learner. So I read all the time. I'm reading books constantly, any way I can digest the information. I read. So a book that I read a while ago and I'm rereading, someone that was my mentor at UBS, Joe Grano, he wrote a book, and I'm going back to it because it's such a terrific book, titled You Can't Predict a Hero. From War to Wall Street, Leading in Times of Crisis. So that's a terrific book that I'm actually rereading, because I read it when it first came out. The other one I'm reading now is Give and Take by Adam Grant. And so that's another book that I'm reading.
Yeah, absolutely great. And of course, for our listeners, there will be links in the description. So if you would like to know more about those books, you can go and you can check them out and see if it's to your liking. But with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today, Rick. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for the thoughtful questions.
No, absolutely my pleasure. And of course, to our audience, if you enjoyed our conversation today, there will be links in the description below where you can find out more about the growth mindset, and of course, links to purchase the book as well, alongside Rick's contact details on the CapuzziAdvisoryGroup.com website. So you can go and you can reach out to him as well. And I would like to thank you, the audience, very much for joining us today on the podcast. It is always a pleasure to have you on every week. And you can reach us on social media at all channels at Lid Radio. And I very much look forward to seeing you next week.